Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of From No Crypto to No Crypto. I'm your host, the crypto coach, Blockchain Wayne. Today, we're joined by Hong. Hong is the CEO of GRVT. Hong, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me here. Great to be here.
Absolutely, man. I got so many questions for you. Like, we're going to find out what GRVT stands for, and we'll dive down that rabbit hole, man. But before we get into that, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and maybe, you know, what you did, if you did anything before you got into this space?
Yeah, sure. And thanks for the brief intro. So, yeah, I'll just say it again. But my name is Hong, and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Gravity. Before I started Gravity, I was with traditional finance. So I was a trader at Goldman Sachs and Credit Suisse out of Hong Kong for about 9 years doing equity swap trading. And then I decided to jump into crypto full-time around in 2022. And interestingly, I actually resigned a week before the Luna crash, unfortunately. And I had to, weather through all of that, and then started this company in October of 2022 with two other co-founders, Aaron and Matthew, and started Gravity.
Gotcha. So you left you basically left your job right after the Luna crash and launched this right before the FTX debacle, right?
Yeah. Quite timely, in fact.
Yeah, absolutely. So. What inspired you to create Gravity?
As a trader, I came across crypto in like early of 2021, and coming from TradFi, crypto trading was actually, it seemed as a little bit more risky than traditional assets, and I think that's because of two reasons. One was obviously the market risk. There's significantly more volatility, but at the same time, there was something else, which is a counterparty risk, or we call it exchange risk, that typically isn't that apparent in the traditional world, right? Because not many traditional exchanges like New York Stock Exchange will go under, right? But then within crypto, you see that because of the back then also, like the market was pretty nascent, and most of these exchanges were, I would say, non-regulated or not licensed, or so therefore it was very tough to understand, you know, how my money was being used, and etc. So as I was trading a little bit more and more, I realized that I wanted to really build something that can eliminate these counterparty risks. And I looked into a few things, and I saw that there was things called decentralized exchanges and DEXs. But we saw that the problem of DEXs back then was that it's very difficult to use. There's a lot of learning curve for someone to understand how to use this. And it was very slow. You couldn't really, as a professional trader, try to trade more effectively. So I decided that, I think it would be very interesting to build a trading platform that leverages blockchain, but at the same time, build it in a way that it also leverages some of the benefits of the central exchange infrastructure. So I came up with the idea of building a hybrid exchange, I started from there.
Gotcha. So hybrid exchange, I guess we'll dive down that rabbit hole in a second. I definitely want you to talk more about that, but you're right. When you think about DEXs, decentralized exchanges, not only the risk of, they're hard to use, they're complicated, but basically it seems like anything and everything can get listed on there as long as you create a liquidity pool. And that leads to a bunch of what I see all the time. I show people this is a bunch of fake tokens, like the scam token. So people may be looking up a legitimate project, legitimate token, and when they type in the name, instead of putting in that contract address, a bunch of fakes come up, or a bunch of others trying to play on that same name that aren't the same, and people end up buying the wrong, asset even.
Yeah, exactly. I think generally within the DeFi space, it is quite prone to such misinformation or sometimes a lot of phishing attacks. So as much as Web3 is quite, I would say, very secure in itself as a technology, there has been, a lot of potential of vulnerabilities that required a lot more effort to alleviate. So maybe I can just explain to you a little bit about how we are approaching this to alleviate things. So diving into a little bit about the hybrid exchange model itself, right? So we, as I mentioned, we're leveraging the blockchain settlement, and then also leveraging the central limit order book, i.e. A centralized order book infrastructure to make it more efficient. But not just that, on top of that, we're also leveraging a few more things. So first of all, we are enhancing the security of a typical decentralized exchange by adding things like password and two-factor authentications on top of the Web3 signing and wallets. So we keep the, I'll say, security of a Web2 on top of Web3. And then also, there's an issue around data privacy. So typically, when you trade on on-chain, most of your transaction details are revealed to public. So there's a lot more, issues around front-running and things like that. So what we've done is we leverage something called Validium on ZK Sync. So we're actually a first app chain on ZK Sync, which I didn't mention yet. But we're leveraging Validium technology to be able to mask all this information and segregate the sensitive data and rolling up only the mask information up on the chain. So there's the additional data privacy that we're looking into. And we also try to keep things a bit more compliant. And within the DeFi space, there's no real concept of regulation, I would say. It's not really, it's purely decentralized. So what we have done something differently is to abide to the traditional regulations. And we're seeking licenses, and as I think we would be the first DeFi exchange to actually seek a license, and we are getting our first license out of Bermuda by end of August of this year, and by doing so, we're going to get fully regulated, and at the same time, we'll be performing KYC and AML screening to our clients to make sure that it is more compliant and a bit more of a safer environment for people to trade. And on top of that, I think one thing that we also emphasize is the ease of use. So as I briefly mentioned, typically decentralized exchanges have a lot of jargon and a huge learning curve for many people to understand how to use it. Mm-hmm. And I think it breaks down to a few things like bridging, for example, or creating wallets, or even in terms of gas that you have to pay for trading. So how we try to do this is one, we have created it so that it's gasless trading. So from your user experience perspective, you're just paying a commission fee. So you're not paying any gas. And at the same time, from a bridging perspectives, you don't have to understand the concept of cross-chain bridging or try to change chains and moving things up and down in different chains. How we do it is we've created the technology to be able to allow deposits directly into our smart contracts, and we sort out all the bridging itself at the back end. So that from a user perspective, all you need to do is copy your wallet and then initiate a deposit from a central exchange or any other venues, and it will straight up show up on your account. So these ways, I think it makes it significantly easier for an ordinary user to be able to interact with the platform. And then I think the last point would be around wallets, right? As much as wallet is easy to use currently, it is a burdensome for a ordinary Web2 user to come in and look at the DEX and see that you have to go to MetaMask or somewhere else to actually create that wallet. So what we've done is created something called a Gravity Wallet on top of the exchange, where even if you have never used a wallet before, you can just come in and create a wallet of your own with a single click on the spot, so that you can use that as your self-custodial wallet to interact with the platform.
Man, you are, I can tell you one thing, man, you're definitely speaking my language here. The last two talks I've given, both during Consensus and during Belgrade Blockchain Week, were about basically a call to action, like we've got to improve the user experience, because many of us get in the space and we learn these complexities just because we want to be early, but the wave of new users that we want to bring in, they're not going to come in until we solve those problems. And we have to hide some of those complexities from the user. They don't need to see everything. I think there's definitely, even offline, some things we could do. So one of the projects that I help run is called FIO, and we also focus on usability, right? Making that process easier. So that's always been a passion of mine. When I started this podcast in 2018, there was two things I said we needed to focus on: education in the space and simple user interfaces. And so I started out down the educational route, and now I'm passionate because we need to see things like this that are easy to use. So you're saying the user's going to get not only avoid that counterparty risk. And for those that are listening, may not understand what counterparty risk is, right? Let's talk about FTX for a second, right? FTX was a centralized exchange where everybody was holding their funds on. And then when there was a run and everybody like had this fear that something may be wrong, started withdrawing their funds, they realized there wasn't enough available. And those users' funds have now been locked up for, going on 2 years now.
Yeah, exactly.
Waiting for some kind of settlement resolution, hoping to recover something. Not only that, right? Mt. Gox is just starting distribution. How many years later?
That's true. In fact, I mean, it's a bit ironical, right? Because blockchain is actually built to resolve such issues. But at the same time, you know, crypto in itself is suffering the same issues that you know, we've been seeing, you know, years back within the TradFi space. So it also proves that, you know, regulation in itself wouldn't really be the key solution to this. I think down the line, I think the what we need to really leverage off is the pure technology that we have in our hands to make sure that it's actually, as you said, like it's easier to use, accessible to everyone, and really merging it with some of the benefits that you can actually find on the central side of things, like TradFi world of side of things. So to make it significantly better. So that's what we're trying to do at the moment.
Nice. So you mentioned earlier, I do want to back up because you mentioned ZK Tech, ZK Sync. And for those that are listening that may not know what that is, can you provide a little insight into what ZK Sync is?
Yeah, so it's a layer two service. So it's we are leveraging, for the people who are new to this, you could think of it as it's like an operating service, right? It's a technology where we are leveraging that technology to be able to create our own chain. So Gravity in itself is a app chain, so an autonomous chain in itself that fully utilizes the technology of ZK Sync. And the reason why we chose ZK Sync over many other chains that's out there is because one of the primary concerns that we had, especially building an exchange or a financial platform, was around data privacy. And to resolve data privacy, we needed something like Validium technology. And what Validium does is it gets a little bit complicated, but ultimately what it does, it separates the information of sensitive information to non-sensitive information, easily put, and only sends the non-sensitive information up into the layer one to prove it on chain. So all your details are intact and not revealed to public. So those are one of the reasons why we chose ZK Sync. And at the same time, when you're choosing a layer two to build an exchange, you also need to consider scalability and throughput and cost. So if I talk about throughput, like transactions per second, because the exchange has to deal with a huge load of computation that has to be going on chain, it requires a lot of high throughput. So, and ZK Sync, one of those layer twos on Ethereum network that has the highest throughputs. So that's another reason why we chose ZK Sync. And at the same time, gas cost is, I believe, one of the lowest within within its peers. And lastly, I think it's an important point is the scalability. So because each chain has a fixed throughput, meaning there's a maximum amount of computation it can do per second. And ZK Sync is unique because each app chain has the ability to interoperate with each other. So from an exchange, what do you mean by interoperating? It means that you're able to communicate across two different chains seamlessly. So what that opens up to is that in the future, in theory, if we use up a full throughput of one chain, then we could roll up another chain to be able to interact to continuously scale up our exchange offering, i.e. you will have one pair in, you will have perps in one chain, options in the other chain, be able to manage the margin through interoperability. So I hope that answers some of your questions around ZK Sync.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to kind of clarify, when you mentioned like separating that personal data from the non-personal data, that would be like to the audience listening, that would be something similar like I can verify my age, you know, by having my birth date, but the data that needs to be shared is only that I'm above a required age, right? Not sharing my actual birth date with, you know, is that kind of an example of separating the personal data from the non-personal data?
Yes, in some ways, in theory, well, if you dive into it, it's Merkle root and Merkle tree. Technically, the data isn't divided from sensitive to non-sensitive, but more around the way that it's encoded. The Merkle tree stays within our servers, and then root, which is something that gets, it's a way to prove that you have that data. So you can only prove it when you have both points, and we're only revealing one point of it. So therefore, in a way, it is a similar way of explaining it, but technically speaking, it's slightly different.
Gotcha. All right, yeah. And now, look, my next question is centered around, as I mentioned to you before we started recording, I know a group that had tried to do something that was kind of a blend of CeFi, DeFi, and they actually tried this several years ago. Obviously, I have access to a lot better tech. It looks like, you know, building more of the mechanisms on-chain definitely makes sense. But I'm curious, what were some of the biggest challenges you guys faced in building a hybrid exchange?
I think for us, the few challenges were around security and privacy, and user experience, and also scalability. But I think I've answered some of those questions. But like scalability was really a problem because we wanted to make sure that our exchange had enough throughput to be able to facilitate huge amounts of volume. And also, we wanted to build an institutional-grade platform that could also offer services to high-frequency traders and different institutions. But to be able to do that, we needed to make sure that the chain itself had a very high throughput, and also be able to scale. And that's why we had to do a lot of research around the offerings on, you know, what kind of chains actually offer these kind of things, and were able to fortunately find ZK Sync when they were launching Validium in early of 2023. So I think, to your point, you know, if there were different providers or protocols that were looking to do this maybe 3-4 years before, I think it would have been pretty tough because over the past 2 years, I would say, or year and a half, the technology has significantly improved to offer a scalable technology for people to deploy these kind of complicated exchanges. And and then the second one, as I mentioned, is around the user experience. That's also in a way technology, right? Because if you want a better user experience, you need to be creative, and creativity can be achieved through the support of technology, right? Mm-hmm. If you are looking to you know, allow bridging to be across chain, or as simple as the one that I explained with you, where you're creating proxy wallets and depositing through them, like all this kind of thing requires you know, an advancement of technology, and which we were fortunate enough to, in terms of bridging specifically, be able to find such you know, partners and technologies in the past few months. So that's how we are achieving those UXs. But at the same time, you know, if you think about like gas, like being able to transact things gasless, right? The only reason why we're able to do this is because the gas cost has been coming down so significantly. And lastly, it's around privacy and security. I think privacy I touched upon through Validium, but in terms of on the security side too, like we've been always thinking, how do you make DeFi more secure than what it is now? DeFi in itself as a technology is very secure itself, but it's still, I would say, vulnerable to many attacks because it's still open for everyone to come in and deploy smart contracts. So therefore, we decided to make it a little bit more closed. So it's a private chain so that only us and we can only be the ones to be deploying smart contracts on the chain itself. So what that does is that it really reduces the level of attacks that can happen within the chain. And on top of that, we also apply things like password and 2FAs so that when a user wants to actually interact with the system, they will also have to know their passwords and be able to get access to the smart contracts and the wallets through these kind of additional mechanisms to make sure that we have additional security.
Gotcha. What about, I guess one thing that comes to mind for me too, what about the liquidity? like you mentioned, is that more like a traditional exchange in terms of market makers are going to provide liquidity?
Yes, I think that's a very good point. I mean, liquidity is actually one of the biggest problems, I would say, that I didn't mention in building a community. But our liquidity, we're an order book based exchange. So, and the order book is run off chain, i.e. it's going to be very similar to like as of a Binance. And to offer liquidity, we're partnering with a lot of market makers. And we currently have actually over 17 market makers who are committed to market make on our platform. And we're not live yet, but we'll be going live by September 23rd of this year.
Nice.
So by then, we will have all these 17 market makers coming on board to bring liquidity onto the platform. And yeah, and at the same time, on the other side, we needed to make sure that we also have a lot of takers, right? So takers meaning other than market makers, you need to also have the ordinary people or the traders or institutions that can take from the market makers. And we were fortunate enough to be able to do very interesting marketing campaigns along with ZK Sync. And we now have over 2.5 million registered accounts on our waitlist. And we have over 500,000 followers on Twitter. We have been pushing a lot of efforts on in trying to get as many more people on board as possible, along with more institutions. So we have now over about $3.3 billion of monthly volume that's contractually agreed by some of these institution partners to come in and start taking on the platform when we actually go live.
Nice. And that's going to make it easier for everybody to use. Not have big gaps in the order book. That was kind of my the thing that in my head I was curious the most about. I mean, the technology that you guys built is amazing and that's interesting, but I was always curious at how the liquidity worked, because most people don't realize, like, you know, a DEX is pretty much run by, you know, automatic market makers, people providing liquidity, and it's good to see that's going to happen. And so September, you said September, what was the date again?
23rd.
All right, awesome. So as we look at that, what restrictions? Obviously, you mentioned you guys are, you know, following regulations and going, you know, basically, I guess, wherever you're operating. So who's going to be able to have access to this platform? Are there any exclusions?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a sensitive topic, but as you can imagine, as we are not licensed out of the U.S., we unfortunately will be during fencing the region. As much as we want to operate out of the U.S.,
right,
there are legal restrictions that we need to abide to. And yeah, I mean, we are seeking the first license out of Bermuda, as I mentioned, which is the same license as Coinbase has acquired for their international businesses. And we hopefully will be able to get that by end of August. We generally will be offering to most of the regions across the world, except for certain restricted countries. But those country lists will be announced near launch.
Nice. Well, you know, coming from someone based in the U.S., you know, we hope the regulatory climate will change, like we're hoping, in the next year or so, so you guys can open. Because I understand, man, there's so many exchanges that I don't think people, and if you're new listening to this and you try to use exchanges that they say you're not available in the U.S., it's not that those exchanges don't want U.S. users, they just don't want to deal with the current regulatory climate. And even, you know, I'm based in the U.S., but even our entity is not based in the U.S. for similar reasons. So it's something that hopefully will change soon. But that's exciting to see how this takes place. You know, you guys didn't just set out to solve one problem in the trading space, in the crypto trading space. It seems like you guys are focusing on multiple problems that are all users. So how do you see hybrid exchanges impacting the trading space in terms of, you mentioned UI UX, so you think that's going to be a key to onboarding, massive onboarding of new users that will come in and not have all those friction points?
Yeah, I mean, I think, okay, so maybe just taking that question around, like, how hybrid exchange will impact in the future. I think taking a step back, for us, our key thesis is that in the future, there will be more and more of these hybrid models, and to a point where it will no longer be explained as a hybrid, meaning,
right,
like blockchain in itself is a technology will be applied to many of the financial platforms in the future, and eventually it will become seamless in a way that there will always be some component of on-chain or blockchain or Web3 on top of some of the traditional infrastructures that you see today. And I think that movement has already started. And like, for example, tokenization of real-world assets, and all these institutions claiming that they will be coming on chain very soon, and all of that will also is, in my theory, my perspectives, that will be also shaped around with some of the regulations that are coming out today, to make it a bit more accessible for wider institutions to be able to adopt to. And at the same time, in some ways, people may think that it's limiting access to certain folks, but at the end of the day, it also is opening up new access points to certain institutions or groups that weren't able to participate because of the, I would say, lack of clarity on what they can do and cannot do based on the traditional rules that they have that governs their businesses. So I think it'll be quite interesting over the next few years on how this technology evolves into really fully embed into today's day-to-day's finance.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, funny enough, as I tell people all the time, that comparing it to, right, 20 years ago, there were internet companies that were on the internet. Now it's just an aspect of everybody's business. And you're right, that's going to be the same thing when you look at what blockchain and cryptocurrency and Web3, whatever term they're using for that infrastructure, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, nobody's going to say they're a blockchain company, they're a crypto company, or Web3 company. They're a company that does a certain thing, and they leverage some of that technology, and that's what we're going to see. So yeah, definitely, I can see that hybrid exchange is something that's going to be used for a little while, and then it's just going to be part of infrastructure. So
indeed,
absolutely. So Hong, as we start to wrap it up, man, I definitely want to let the listeners know how they can follow what's going on with you guys and keep up with the traction and the launch in September. So can you tell everybody where they can follow Gravity and find out more about it?
Sure. We have our open beta testnet coming live on the 23rd of July. Our website is grvt.io. And we chose that because it's a short form of Gravity. We're also on Twitter, grvt_io. We also have quite a number of interesting events that's going on nearing our launch in partnership with like ZK Sync and Gravity Tokens. There's potential airdrops coming out. So you can find all those in our website and our blog posts. Stay tuned.
Awesome. So one last question before we wrap up. Your launch date is very close to Token 2049 in Singapore, which is one of the largest crypto events. Are you guys going to have any kind of a presence out there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we'll be there. All our team, especially our co-founders, will be there. We'll be trying to see. We'll be hosting an event soon. So, all of those will be announced in due course.
Awesome. So make sure everybody listen to follow along and keep up with what's going on there. So, Hong, man, it's been a pleasure having you today. Thanks for joining us. Any final words before we wrap up?
It was very enjoyable chat today, and thank you very much for having me on board, and hope that I can speak to you again.
Thanks a lot, man. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode. Take care, everybody.